once again, happy Mother Earth Day. Now, I know that April 22nd was the official date for Earth Day this year, but I thought we might bring together these two cultural celebrations that have become part of many UU congregations' liturgical calendars over the year, Earth Day and Mother's Day. And there are some obvious intersections between the two, and we've already been singing and hearing about them. The opening chant that we sang this morning, "The Earth is our mother, we must take care of her," and then the third verse was actually, "The Earth is our mother, she will take care of us." So this morning, on this Mother Earth Day, we're going to look at some ways in which we are called to mother the earth and the ways in which the earth mothers us. So before I go any further, I want to acknowledge that both of these days, Earth Day and Mother's Day, are not without their emotional baggage. There is a tendency to want to romanticize and idealize both mothers and nature. Hallmark's Hall of Fame shows and cards notwithstanding, mothering and Mother's Day can be an emotionally complex day. As Reverend Leah's prayer expressed so powerfully, there are many ways in which we mother, have been, or have not been mothered. And, you know, let's face it, we love nature when it's loving us, when the weather is perfect, the snow is white, the air is fresh. But when nature unleashes the tornado, the tsunami, the hurricane, the earthquake, the mudslide, the lightning strike on us or on communities we know, the devastation is horrific and real. So if there is one spiritual challenge that both Mother's Day and Earth Day invite us to take up, it's to consider how important our self-centeredness is to the living of our lives. For most of us, not all admittedly, but most of us, the quality of our lives would be vastly different without the self-sacrifice of the mothers who gave us life and care. We take motherhood for granted, but everyone who has been a parent or has had parents doesn't have to think too hard to recognize the tremendous commitment and generosity of giving of the self that is involved. Self-centered parents that neglect a child's emotional life and physical needs can distort or scar a child for life. But let's look at what this understanding means as we consider whether Mother Earth is our parent or whether it's actually the reverse, that we are the parents that can shape the ongoing life of this being, the earth that we've been given. So, for a moment, instead of thinking about Earth as our mother, let's consider her as a child, and let's call this child Gaia. By any objective standard, the state of our child Gaia, the earth, is not healthy. All the vital signs are somewhat alarming. The earth is, in fact, running a fever. The last decade was the hottest on record. And then we look at the signs of life that Gaia exhibits. 90% of big ocean fish are gone since 1950. 50% of the Great Barrier Reef is gone since 1985. Current ocean plankton decline rates of 1% per year means that they will be 50% gone in 70 years. And yet we are asking this child of ours to work harder while not feeling well at all. We know that seasons are changing. It's sometimes strange ways. It's like our child Gaia got a dose of hormones by mistake. And there are plenty of places online, on the internet, where you can read about the worst possible long-term consequences of the deteriorating health of our child Gaia by the end of this century. Food chains disrupted, more wildfires, heat waves, rising sea levels that could make some cities unlivable. And these are the things that we can see above ground. What's even more dangerous is what we don't see, what we can't quite anticipate or predict. It's just like, you know, when you go out in nature and you turn a rock over and there are hundreds, maybe thousands of those tiny little insects scurrying underneath the surface. there are probably even more troubling interconnections that we aren't even aware of right now. So you would think that a responsible member of our human family would recognize these signs of deteriorating health in a family member, a child, or a mother, and realize that life cannot go on as usual while therapy and healing begins. You would think that, but human self-centeredness is a powerful driver in our world. Our economic security, our convenience, our usual order of things is not only hard to change, but for some people, it calls for a ferocious defense. So take the leaders of our current federal administration, for example. If we stick to my metaphor of Earth as our child Gaia, we have leaders who are essentially telling this sick child, buck up, it's not so bad, stop whining, clean your room, do your chores, and then make me dinner. The catalog of devastations that have occurred within our current administration's first 100 days are the equivalent of this kind of imperious action by a self-centered parent. Now, I am not going to read the entire catalog of offenses against the earth. That would take certainly more than an hour. But let me just highlight a few of them that have happened most recently. All of these were found in an article from the National Geographic magazine, published on May 10th, 2017. We go backwards in time because that's the direction these executive orders are taking us. April 28th, our 45th president signs an executive order that reviews the Obama-era bans on offshore oil and gas drilling in parts of the Arctic, Pacific, and Atlantic oceans. And this order also halts the designation of expansion of national marine sanctuaries. Instead, they are to be examined for their energy or mineral resource potential. March 28th, the president signs an executive order that rescinds the EPA's clean power plan designed to reduce carbon dioxide emissions from new and existing power plants. March 27th, oil begins flowing into the pipeline laid underneath North Dakota's Lake Ahoyee, the same pipeline that runs near the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation. March 9th, EPA Director Scott Pruitt downplays carbon emissions as the central role in driving Earth's climate change, a position at odds with scientific consensus. With a stroke of a pen, political work and social consensus that had been carefully and systematically built over the last 8 years was blown away, like the white dandelion puffs we will soon be seeing. Policies and procedures that, frankly, many of us took as signs that we could interrupt what seems like the inevitable march towards global deterioration of our environment are now either eliminated or in serious jeopardy. Seventh principle of our Unitarian Universalist faith reminds us that we covenant to affirm and promote the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. And the image of that interdependent web has caught our imagination because it speaks so powerfully to the truth that is found in human nature and in our ecological world. We know this in our bones, that we are inextricably connected to each other and to the earth, which provides an umbilical cord for us of life. We know that what happens to the earth happens to us. There is no separate self from the human community that surrounds us. There is no separate American life without the health of the rest of the world. And there is no separate human community apart from the health of the earth. Often lost below the surface of the reporting of our current environmental crisis is the recognition that those who are affected the most by environmental degradation are people and communities of color, and most notably, women of color. So when we lift up Mother Earth using female symbolism to speak to all that's right and hopeful about the planet, We are also acknowledging that in this world, women's health, women's needs, and women's rights are often at the bottom of the social hierarchy of self-centeredness, and that the sickness of this planet is first and frequently manifested in women's lives. We see this in developing countries where it's well documented that women are at a higher risk of harm and even death from climate change, natural disasters, which are expected to become more severe as the world heats up, are more likely to kill women than men. And this disparity is lowest when women's socioeconomic status is considered. Durban is one of the largest cities in South Africa. It's grappling with one of the worst droughts in human history. And since weather affects everyone, the idea that women are more susceptible to the effects of climate change, particularly in developing countries, may seem puzzling to some. But women are more likely to collect water, food, firewood, cook meals, and therefore feel the brunt of extreme weather, disappearing water, and soil degradation. And furthermore, research also shows that when resources are scarce, women often give food to their husbands and sons while denying themselves and their daughters. Now, you don't have to go to South Africa, Nepal, Haiti, or Thailand to see how climate change affects the lives of women and communities of color. Go to Flint, Michigan, for example. Because many of the households affected by the Flint, Michigan water crisis were headed by women, it was the women, many of whom were women of color, who blew the whistle on the water crisis. They realized that the water their children were bathing in and brushing their teeth in smelled, looked, and tasted wrong. It was the women who said, "You are poisoning us, and this has to stop." It was 9-year-old Mari Kopeni. She's also known as Little Miss Flint, whose online activism helped persuade President Obama to visit Flint, Michigan, and to address the city's water crisis. So environmental racism is now a part of our larger conversation about the environment. When I was growing up and becoming a young adult, there was an image of Mother Earth, and she looked like this. She had, you know, long, flowy blonde hair and silken gowns. Well, I think this next image is closer to what Mother Earth actually looks like. Beyoncé, 2017 Grammy Awards, pregnant with twins. Or still yet, like this. Like the women of Standing Rock, standing together strong. So, in light of these facts, these devastations, these possible impending calamities, what are we to do? You know, I gotta confess, you know, while doing research for this sermon and reading the statistics and the facts and the science, I was tempted to fall into despair because they are overwhelming. The insults and degradation seem to be endless, from the possible extinction of bumblebees and plants and animals to changing weather patterns to rising seas to calving icebergs to the image of that polar bear clinging to that one piece of ice. Where do we find hope? So when the world threatens to plunge me into despair about the environment, I recalled a particular river from my childhood. It was a Sunday morning of June 1969, and I remember reading this small article in my hometown paper that said, "The Cuyahoga River caught fire today." If you remember that, or been around long enough to remember when the Cuyahoga River in Cleveland, Ohio caught fire. I was a child then, and my brain could not figure out how a river could catch fire. "Isn't a river full of water?" I asked my mother, naively. Well, of course, we know now that the river was so polluted by decades of industrial waste that an oil slick could catch fire on top of the river water. In my home state of Ohio, it was a powerful image of a burning river that pushed forward the environmental activism in a new way. And some say that it was that that helped give birth to the new environmental movement. So it's tempting to want to fall into despondency, but we can also take comfort in knowing and realizing how much our consciousness has changed about the interdependent web. I mean, many of us have switched, for example, to plant-based diets or one that greatly reduces our dependence on animal protein. And as I said, by the way, as you may remember, all of the treats after the service today are vegan, thanks to the group Discovering Our Values Through Ethical Eating. And our own congregation has taken seriously the commitment towards becoming a green sanctuary, which requires an intensive audit of the environmental practices of members of this fellowship and the fellowship as an institution. I know so many of you. We bike to work, we drive low-emission cars, we recycle, we reuse. We do this not to claim moral superiority over one another, but because our consciousness has changed, and we know that everything we do has a lasting impact on the planet. And because as small as these efforts may seem, they do have a collective impact on the common good. We're becoming more awake to the ways in which the treatment of women and people of color and the planet are all interconnected. We know that the way our society treats women, the way that it denies or denigrates the lives of people of color, will reflect the ways in which we take care of the earth. I can't conclude this sermon without holding up some other lights of hope that give me inspiration in the same way that my healthy Cuyahoga River does. There are some places on our planet that, against all odds, are turnaround stories. Rwanda was able to reintroduce black rhinos into their natural parks and protect them against poaching for self-centered human purposes. Species presumed to have been lost have been rediscovered. In 2016, wind and solar industry reported a blockbuster year. Carbon emissions were indeed flat for the third straight year in a row. Iceland is figuring out how to store carbon dioxide rather than allowing it to escape into the atmosphere. The food industry is embracing healthier and more nutritious products. One of the last things my husband and I did before we left Cleveland last summer was to go down to Lake Erie and dip our toes in the lake to say goodbye. We live just 3 blocks from the lake, and we walk there often. Lake Erie was another body of water that within my lifetime was so polluted with oil and agricultural and industrial runoff that no one wanted to go near it, much less stick their toes in it. But on that day last summer, the lake was sparkling and children were playing in the water. I wanted to hold that day in my mind forever, as if the beach and the lake were like a beautiful blue marble that I could hold between my fingers. So bring that moment to you to combine with all the moments and memories that you have in your mind of the places that have nourished you, places you have shared with those you love, places that have held you like a mother, that have sustained you through times of loss and offered you times of great joy. Just sit with that place for a minute. I close with these words, heard again from the Alice Walker reading, who asks us, what will we need? 100 years at least to plan, in which circles of women meet, organize ourselves, and allied with men brave enough to stand with women, nurture our planet to a degree of health. And without apology, devote ourselves, heedless of opposition, to tirelessly serving and resuscitating our mothership, and with gratitude for her care of us, worshipfully commit to rehabilitating it. May our words and our deeds make it